The Wimbledon tennis tournament begins next week, and this Sunday, CNN will air a documentary about a legendary player whose impact on the sport can still be felt today. Arthur Ashe was the only black man to win singles titles at Wimbledon, the U.S., and Australian Open tournaments. In the film Citizen Ashe, he reflects on how stoicism helped him cope with racism in the 1960s and 70s.
Some people say that my notion or feelings of self-sufficiency go too far. I think I can almost withstand just about anything.
Arthur Ashe died in 1993. Citizen Ashe explores how he used his fame to promote civil rights and later AIDS awareness. His brother Johnny Ashe spoke with me about the film back in November, and I asked him what Arthur was like as a boy.
He was my big brother. When Daddy wasn't around, he was the enforcer. And I say that with a giggle because of his mild-mannered nature, but he knew what Daddy expected of us, you know, and he, of course, helped me with homework, checking my vernacular and those, that type of thing, you know.
Sounds like a good brother. Now, you said that Arthur was the enforcer when your daddy wasn't around. Your dad was a tough, strict guy. You know, your mother died when Arthur was very young.
Daddy had a lot of respect for authority, and he realized us being born in the capital of the Confederacy, Richmond, Virginia, that things would be tough growing up to a certain degree because we were young Negro boys. And he had a set of values and he had a set of disciplines that he instilled in us. And quite frankly, I'm glad he did for both of our sakes, for Arthur's and mine, because those disciplines are where Arthur's lifestyle started. And it did me in good stead because of my career in the Marine Corps.
Well, people who are familiar with your brother's story may not actually know that you may have played a pretty important role advancing his tennis career, because it was you who volunteered to do a second tour of duty in Vietnam. And that meant that Arthur Ashe wouldn't go into combat. Tell me how you made that choice.
Well, the choice was simple. I didn't want that for my brother. He didn't need that. I had known from an early age that Arthur was more than just a tennis player. Tennis was a catalyst for him. You know, I knew that Arthur was going to make his mark in the world one way or the other.
Well, he may have had much more to give than what he could on the tennis court, but he was still a really good athlete. In 1968, he won the U.S. Open, and we have a taste of what that sounded like.
And he's got it!
He is still the only black man who has ever won that tournament. But what was it like to watch it happen as his brother?
Well, when it was over, all I could do is go to my room and, you know, give it a good fist bump and say, he did it. And he called me a little later that day, you know, and he said, I said, well, you did it. You're there now. He says, I'm a champion now and people will listen to me. What that told me was tennis was still a vehicle in his life. It wasn't the end all. And that, in my mind, justified everything that I did.
Well, you know, you're right. People did want to hear from him at that point, didn't they? Because shortly after he won, they invited him on to face the nation. Here's some of that.
If you happen to be black, in these times, maybe not 30 years ago, but in these times, 1968, it's really a mandate that you do something. You must. And there are other athletes and other black leaders, period, who are using their positions of power and influence to wield some practical progress. So it's just simply saying to myself, Arthur, you must do something. You just cannot sit by and let the world go by.
So this is another really interesting thing about your brother. In the early days of his career, he chose not to get involved with the civil rights movement. And he wasn't speaking out like a lot of the other professional black athletes were at the time. Tell me about that and why you think he made those choices.
Because he wasn't ready. If you listen to his answers, you would realize that he had taken some time to think about how he fit into the situation at that point in his life. And he, at that point in his life, was ready to become vocal and active. Being Arthur, he had to pick his time. He wasn't going to do it because somebody else said you need to do it. He had to do it his way.
Well, then he did. and he got pretty active in the anti-apartheid movement for South Africa. He called for boycotts. He demanded that the stadium get desegregated before he would play there. I mean, it was pretty controversial. How much of an impact do you think he ended up making?
I think it was, to a large degree, a great impact. He spent more time in the ghettos of South Africa than he did on the tennis court. You know, he allowed and wanted the young South Africans to see what a free Black man looked like. He wanted them to see the possibilities. And when you think about it, that's what Arthur has always represented, the possibilities of life.
Johnny, I want to ask you about another important chapter of your brother's story. It was, of course, his battle with AIDS after a blood transfusion in the 1980s. He tried very, very hard to keep it private. What do you remember about the early days after he got sick? I mean, what was his outlook on the diagnosis?
To a degree, it was devastating because he knew his time in life would be cut short. But what that actually did, it caused Arthur to quicken the pace to do the things that he had thought he might want to do. You know, he got involved with the Heart Association and, of course, the Foundation on AIDS. And he got more involved with lecturing kids and other things. But it just accelerated his timeline for life.
What was that like for you? This was your big brother, you know, the guy who you did an extra tour in Vietnam for.
I'm not going to say it devastated me, because I always held out hope for them having found a cure. But by the same token, I realized that, you know, I was in a situation where I had to hold on to the possibilities and, you know, help him in any way that I could. And basically that's what I did, you know, because the very, very few people knew. Daddy didn't know.
Why? I mean, why not tell your dad?
Well, Daddy had already had heart problems. And I think Arthur believed that that would just increase the worry and anxiety that he had had all his life.
And there was the stigma of AIDS.
Well, yeah, but the stigma that Arthur was worried about for Jeannie and Cameron,
his wife and daughter.
I don't think it was a matter of stigma as far as Daddy was concerned. Okay. You know, there was no question in our minds or in Arthur's mind whether he was heterosexual or not. And that's where a lot of the stigma came from.
I want to listen to what I think might have been his last public statement. This is from the Connecticut Forum in 1993.
There is still a tremendous amount of work to be done with the public to assure them that ordinary contact with people like myself poses absolutely no danger to them. I can sneeze in their presence. I can cough in their presence. We can drink out of the same glass. We can use the same knife, fork, or spoon. We can kiss. And you're not going to transmit the virus.
It's amazing to listen to that and remember what it was like in the late 1980s and the early 1990s when AIDS was little understood. But what kind of responsibility do you think your brother felt to then become almost an AIDS activist?
Well, I think the answer to that question is the simple fact that if you think about Arthur's life, he became an activist from the time he won his first tennis tournament in Richmond, Virginia, from the time he went to UCLA and won the indoors and won the NCAA. Arthur's life was quiet activism, because what does an activist do? Activists try to influence people, okay, and I hope they do it for the right reasons. But Arthur, living the life that he lived, was pure activism without him saying a word.
Johnny Ash speaking with me last November. Citizen Ash will air this Sunday on CNN.